And the moderator for this session is Matt Thomas, of course. Matt, wave your hand up there, head of sales for Media Silo. But we've got a really great panel for you of content holders, content creators. We'll start with Joshua Berger. He's the Senior Vice President of Media Management at AMC Networks. You all sat in perfect order. Unbelievable. Then we have Christy Mumi. She's the Vice President of Studio Content Operations for TNT TBS. Mark Rusciano, the Director of Technical Operations and for Productions at A&E Television Networks. And you all have 30 minutes. There's a big red clock here. You know, don't be afraid to go over. And if you need to do a little Q&A, just give me a shout. But this is really for all y'all's enjoyment. So thank you so much for attending. And Matt, take it away.
Thank you very much, Guy, and thank you for Mesa for putting this on. And, you know, if we hit 31 minutes, go ahead and play us off, have the orchestra play us off. Also, thank you for everyone for joining the panel. This panel actually came out of a conversation that I had with Mark Gatto from AMC Networks. We were having beers and realized that there was no networking or thought leadership group for operations people. They're often the forgotten workhorses of the enterprise. And so we put together a series of events called Tech Hops, where we brought people together. And so each of the panelists here have sat on the panels of Tech Hops events. And so a lot of the conversation that we're going to have today came out of those discussions. So the topic of the panel is safe, easy, or cheap. And if you could think of those three things on the points of a triangle, you can really ever have two of those at one time. And so trying to balance all of those things within the enterprise dealing with lots of different media is very difficult. The content protection team has put together best practices in place to make sure that the content is secured, but it's really up to operations to implement processes and systems to meet those best practices, but also meet deadlines and not bust the budget. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So kick things off. Enforcement of deadlines needs to be met for operations, and yet a lot of times security best practices, if followed to the letter, will make it so that you have to miss a deadline. So how do you enforce deadlines in your processes, and what valves do you have in place when something is not going to meet air if the process is followed and you need to go off script? Josh, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. So that question summarizes the friction point, I think, between content protection and operational expediency and efficiency. At AMC, we realized that actually you couldn't manage those as separate activities, so we merged our IT protection with our operations media management group. And so it became ultimately our problem to solve, which it needed to be, because we were the ones with our hands on the levers to be able to speed up, slow down that content distribution. I think for me, a lot of it circles around the fact that we don't have a lot of control upstream, so we really rely on deploying a bunch of different methodologies to try to ensure that content is as secure as it can be, and knowing that not all content is created equal. You can't really apply apply a Fort Knox type solution to everything that we do today. But there are certain protocols that you can put in place that will help not only increase the overall level of protection within your distribution chain, but allow you to really differentiate when you have those shows like, we have The Walking Dead, consistently been the second most pirated show. That's not something we're proud of, but from a content protection perspective, but it certainly is a symptom of a highly successful show with a rabid, tech-savvy fan base. So, the types of protocols and systems that we're using for that show really, I think, helped us inform the way we protect all of our shows. It's just that we don't necessarily apply the same technology solutions to everything, but certainly the staff and knowledge, control mechanisms and process is the same. It's just that we're not always able to deploy the luxury model technology solution for every single time.
And then, Christy, same question, but what if you're faced with missing a deadline for Animal Kingdom or something? How far up the chain would it need to go to get somebody to approve moving it outside of the security process in order to meet the deadline?
We don't miss deadlines ever, no. Well, I don't know. I think that it depends on what content it is, right? And I think that, you know, generally if you're in a position where you might miss a deadline, it might be because your system isn't working. Something's crashed. There's a server that isn't working. Media silo is down. Something has happened. And then you end up... But I think you have to have those secrets in your pocket, right? Like, you have to know that, all right, if this isn't going to work, then I've got this or I've got that. And, you know, maybe you have to move to a system or something where you don't have that security, but then you can follow it down the chain and you can make sure, you know, maybe you're not able to protect it in the front end, but you can kill it a day later or 2 hours after that or something. Like, I think you just have to constantly be thinking about, all right, what is my plan B? What is my plan C? And hopefully you don't end up in a dire situation. If you end up doing that, then, you know, I think it's been helpful for us to have a security person that lives with us in our office. I usually throw him on the front line to say, you know, hey, this is not going to work for us because of X, Y, and Z. And I think, you know, by doing that, by letting him develop those relationships within our company, it's allowed everyone to understand that it is also their responsibility to make sure that everything's done effectively, and we can't always, you know, make everybody happy in every situation.
And Mark, same question to you.
Clock's not moving. That's a good sign.
You have plenty of time.
We can talk forever. What's the cursing rule in something like this, by the way?
By the way, any of the seven dirty words, though, but anything else cringy?
Cringy.
Cringy.
Okay. I don't know what the fuck that means.
Yeah.
I like that he said, is that one good?
That's good.
Okay.
I like that. Would you say you said that friction point?
Yeah.
I believe. Yeah.
Yes, I did.
I like that. I'm going to use that right now. So I feel like, at least from our perspective at A&E, and this is not, indifferent than anything that most companies do, security, like what Chris said, make sure you have somebody sitting at your table, because no one else cares about security. And from a content creation and distribution standpoint, it's got to go, especially involving press. We have similar situations where we'll have internal press sites that we're not under our wing, created legacy, people continue to use it, they want to do the easy, non-secure way, and then, you know, the season premiere of the final season of Bates gets hacked from day one and put all over the internet, and suddenly we make a phone call to us and say, oh, okay, this is time to talk. Under my division, we are also dealing with a lot of source material, the majority of it, dailies, coming directly from the studios, directly from scripted and non-scripted. And I feel like those deadlines for those content creators, being marketing, short form, any of those distributions, it's not just about long form anymore. Legal, everything's going to be packed the same way. Our internal legal and S&P department treat short form no different than long form. And I feel like that's where security gets elapsed, because the people involved with that aren't as experienced. Is that the right way to not be an agent? And say, security doesn't mean anything to them. And their personal box accounts do, and Google Drive and things that are outside our enterprise. So I think just a suggestion of making sure you have point security people, literally individuals that you can throw under the bus or throw at the problem, because it shouldn't be our thing. I mean, I always tell Matt this all the time, that like, we pay vendors sometimes for a reason. In this day and age, like, the content creation and distribution should be our priority, and security should just come with that.
So you mentioned that nobody cares about security, and the feedback I consistently get is that the higher up the corporate ladder you get, the less they care about security, despite the fact that, you know, they're the biggest stakeholders in this. So how do you deal with senior executives that want to see something but refuse to log into anything? How do you create a culture of security that applies to everyone and manage up?
Joshua?
Okay.
I think the challenge is that, convenience is sort of the foe of security. And so, systems that provide convenience are going to be more successful in getting adoption. So, you know, making screening activity, you know, executives wanting to watch shows, making it as consumer friendly as possible is critical. You're never going to, I think, you know, completely eliminate the DVD request. But, you know, I think in order to support that, it actually increases the effort, right? So the ease goes away, it becomes high lift, because now you're, you know, hand delivering, having, you know, individual watermark DVDs, people waiting for people to finish screening before taking DVDs back, you know, back in place. I do think that culturally, and I think we were talking about a little bit earlier about the culture of security, you can't actually hire enough security people to create a secure workflow, production workflow. You have to instill the security mentality as a cultural phenomenon into the organization. And that's actually where you become more effective and more powerful, because everybody in your organization is trusted at various stages to touch the crown jewels. And if they're not given the tools, you know, the education that they need to help you protect the content, you're not going to win. So cultural change is huge. And I think from going back to the senior executive point, I think the hacking culture that exists and the criminality of it today is actually going to force a lot of that mindset to change at the senior level. Because there are, you know, board implications. So I think, you know, the days of being laissez-faire and sort of, you know, lax and wanting to have it your way without understanding the risks are not, I think, very long. I think we're actually at the tail end of that. I don't think we have a choice.
Been enough high-profile leaks that people are really starting to understand the implications of.
Well, and it's just, you know, we talk about leaks from a content perspective, but I think these are the same guys that are, you know, ransoming organizations and putting, you know, malware in, ransomware, stealing not only your property but your money. So it's the same guys, you know, and they're using the same tools. So you can't really differentiate. I would say you can't really differentiate between the two anymore.
Christy, what role do you expect vendors to play in implementing your operational security processes, and what steps do you take to evaluate a new vendor?
Well, you know, we sit outside of our division, so I work within the TNT TBS Originals Group, which is a part of Turner, and, you know, with that comes sort of the benefit and kind of the downfall of being in a satellite office. So we have, you know, we have this larger organization that is looking out for our interests and everybody else within the network, you know, they can go out and spend a lot of time and resources and do a lot of digging and, you know, find people to suit some, you know, issues that we have. You know, sometimes that works for us. Sometimes we have people in our world who are looking at, you know, they're looking at publicity's workflows and marketing's workflows and our workflows and the network workflows and everything, and trying to kind of fit have a one-size-fits-all solution for everybody, which of course doesn't work. But those people are great and they do great work, and I think, you know, I've benefited a lot from a lot of research and trying to, and their expertise and understanding that there are vendors in our world that we can pick and choose from. I think, you know, I also have to grow rogue sometimes and find solutions that fit our division more than anybody else at Turner. And I think it gets confusing too when it comes to vendors who are brought in from a broader level who end up then in our world trying to piece together our problems with a bigger network. And a lot of it is, you know, an education on both sides, where if someone says, oh great, you can use Media Silo now, this is in your world, you know, it's probably been pitched at a particular level that it's meant for this workflow, but I actually need it for that. And, you know, I think I've had to really advocate with our vendors what it is that we're doing, try and differentiate it from the larger network, and to, you know, and I think I've gotten a lot of help from most of our vendors who understand that there are two sides of what we're trying to do.
And Mark Central, please.
I echo what my colleague said. I would also say with, it seems like, you know, what Christy does is a lot of what we do with service. I feel like we need to be as invisible as possible. I always feel like these tech ops things are like tech of operations therapy for me. I'm like out here like, oh God. But I really think being invisible to the client, I believe Josh mentioned like, you know, being able to get them to adopt something without them realizing that it occurs. I know the challenge Christy says with having multiple vendors, and you know, we have obviously vendor security checkpoints that we have to go through before working with somebody, but one of the things that we challenge to do is also question their API, so that if they're if we are taking on, especially cloud-based or asset management-based vendors, that they are open to integrating with all of our other ones. So while it is impossible, as Christian said, to find a single solution, to me it should look like a single solution to the executive, to the end user that either doesn't care or doesn't know enough. And that's when you start challenging your vendor for, you know, we've discussed this before, for front-end accessibility. And like, you know, I always use, unfortunately, my mother as like the baseline, that my mother should be able to understand something when we're doing it. That's the way it is in this day and age, because that's how something stays invisible to the client, that they don't realize they're doing it. Because I think we all go through this with file-based delivery being something, you know, 15 years ago that was on the forefront, and then cloud accessibility and asset management being with them now. You know, people have their own ways of working, and then if they're, you know, if you don't have somebody sitting at the executive table to speak for this within your company, or if security is not important to your CTO or CIO or not on the top, these things are going to happen on the executive level, and they're not going to care until something happens, and you're still going to be waiting for it. So I think the objective, at least my perspective, is always to keep things as invisible as possible to the end users that we would worry about the most.
So that, to that point, you mentioned a bit of, I guess, vendor fatigue. Joshua, how do you
guys are so much more poetic than I am. Jesus.
Joshua, how do you manage the growing number of vendors in the enterprise? Not all content is created equal, and you need a much more secure solution for Walking Dead than, you know, maybe something on WeTV or IFC. So how do you manage having the right solution for the right content without having, you know, copia of products to manage all of that?
I would say it's not good to have too many vendors, but you also need to have enough vendors, right? So it's trying to strike that balance. Certainly with the interconnectivity and all the interoperability of the supply chain, any single weak point in that vendor universe can present a risk to you, right? And these supply chains are pretty long. We can have a leak or an issue occur, on the other side of the world, and that has a potential negative impact to domestic, premier rating. And so, controlling that is extremely difficult, but, we have to vet our vendors. Ideally we would verify, we use the honor system. We have a vendor security questionnaire that each of our vendors, group vendors, fill out. And based on those responses, we try to determine if they're high, what sort of risk level they are. And if they're too high risk, then we have difficult conversations with some of the departments that are, wanting to engage them. And we usually get the line, he's a great guy, and we worked with him in the past, and it's very, very inexpensive.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, and we have to have a hard discussion with him. Like, look, okay, that's what if we're going to trust this person with our content, they have to, conform to a certain level of security standard. Otherwise, it presents a significant risk to our business model. So mindset and culture with keeping that, and certainly I think Mark, you were talking about the, without being ageist, when you get into the long, you know, the short form, the behind the scenes, the extra, you know, extra footage that gets shot, it's going to make it to the DVD or go on the social platforms. It's really difficult. It's not easy, actually. And we just try to prune as few vendors as is required, and those vendors should be, you know, should meet your muster.
So both in the enterprise, and particularly for you, Christy, working with third-party production partners and vendors, how do you manage the whole BYOD world where people want to use their own iPads and their own iPhones and they have access to your content? How do you manage and enforce that or restrict it?
That's a good question. I mean, I think we were talking about Boston Dropbox right before we came up here, and I want to scream and turn my hair out every time somebody wants to send that to me. I mean, I think that you have to understand why people are driven to use those types of systems, and you have to try and make things easy for them. You know, I was in this situation recently. I was going to a birthday party over the weekend, and I live in this world. I deal with these systems. I deal with content all day. I needed to look at something on the way to this birthday party, and I was trying to log into something. For some reason, my password wasn't working. I had to change my password, all in the car, not driving, but in the car. I had to change my password, had to navigate, oh no, I need the app. All right, I'm in the app now. Now I put in the password, and now there's some other problem. And then finally, like probably after 10 minutes, I get to the content, there's no audio. And I was gonna lose my mind. And I know how to troubleshoot this stuff. I know this system front and back. We've used them for at least 10 years. Like, it was a headache and a half for me. And again, I am supposed to be able to solve these problems. So I get it. Like, I understand why people don't want to use certain things. I understand why, you know, people want their tried and true systems. And I think we all need to make it easy for people. We need blanket solutions. We need, you know, we don't want to point people to 20 different places to do what they need to do, but you have to be able to provide a reasonable solution that is meeting all of the requirements that they've been living in. Sometimes that's a very difficult thing to do. You know, other than that, I think it's education. It's getting people to understand why it is that you don't want them to use that. It's not just that, oh, there's this shiny new toy over here that, you know, oh, we paid a bunch of money to have you use this system, so now this is what we want. It's that information. It's going back to your security people, putting them on the line to you and saying, here's why we don't want you using this. And hopefully there are some good tangible reasons. Otherwise, you know, it's listening and understanding why people might want to go another route. And maybe in some cases it's okay. Maybe there's a risk. Maybe, you know, your short form content, maybe your promo content, maybe that's okay if that gets out and then you're all willing to assume the risk. But I think, you know, we all need to be very cognizant of the fact that it's not always easy. Like, it's easy to blame your senior execs, and it's easy to blame people who want to use their, you know, third-party software. But I think you also have to live in reality and understand how you do these things and not force people to do something that's not working for you.
Okay, I'll throw you a little curveball, Mark, but from your perspective, the most expensive systems usually are the ones that provide the most security, or flip that, the ones that provide the most security usually cost the most. So do you think that security is something that, from a financial perspective, benefits the whole enterprise and should come out of the central budget, or it should be borne by each department based on what their needs are?
I would answer that by saying that there are too many departments that, in, you know, I think we all deal with departments that shouldn't be holding meetings with vendors that, you know, there's so many departments along the chain. Like, you know, we deal with a lot of dailies and stuff coming directly from the studios or non-scripted, and you know, there's a prod co there, and a prod co that uses somebody, and then that somebody's interacting with programming, and I may not even interact with that person in programming. I may not even know who they are, right? But they are now sharing assets that have a huge security risk, at a level that is not even close to our enterprise. So now they're getting stuff from their vendor, their production company's vendor, that then they're sharing internally, right? So in order to answer, you know, and then it hasn't even got into our enterprise yet. It's just sharing that link, like, you know, I don't want to say it, that box link, that whatever they're using. And I'm just shocked at how many people in a company like I work that's so internationally large that are here today that are not in technical operations or production holding meetings with vendors that are talking about content distribution, that are talking about getting my assets faster, that are, you know, and they're coming up. So it's like, it's one thing we talk about battling the legacy, right? It's one thing when you talk about battling the legacy point of my Google Drive, my Box account, but then people are actually holding meetings. The line is so gray between what we do and what they want to do. And if we can't provide it, they're going to figure it out themselves. So in order to have a centralized, you know, security budget, I think that within your company, you know, within the technology department, all of the solutions have to be centralized. So I don't know if I'm answering your question correctly, but I can tell you that, you know, if I take 2 years to roll out an asset management system with a vendor and go through, you know, the POCs and go through the RFPs, like, I don't remember security being a priority. Like, I just, it's part of an assumption. Like, sure, my IT department will meet with whatever vendor, but I don't believe it's important enough for it to be something that financially everybody, you know, on the CFO chain puts this as a priority. Again, I know I'm the downer here in this group sometimes, but I just feel like, I feel like when we talked about this last time, that it, you know, I just see, you know, short form, if I could speak honestly, short form has become a huge issue with everything that we do. And now, I probably wouldn't say from a marketing or even monetized perspective, short form is a hell of a lot more better to be monetized than permanent. But I do feel like it brings the same level of risk, the same source material, the same delivery mechanism, but at the same time, you're bringing a younger generation of people that don't understand or care about that. And you mentioned where short form go. Number one place, social distribution. Right? So the approach to people creating content for social is not, they're not supposed to have any barriers, right? They're not supposed to, you know, so I'll show up in meetings about bringing people, you know, closer to the island, and they're using applications that I've never even heard of, that they're literally taking content that they may just be repurposing off the editing tool or the distribution tool, and using third-party applications that IT has no part of, because that's just part of that environment. So I feel like my main thing is to literally remove technology from it and talk about a culture shift, talk about when people say, oh, I need my media. It's not your media. Like, I think that's the biggest obstacle in my whole department. That's what we constantly do. It's like, you know, it's like you're selling something all the time, that this is not their media and that this distribution can come back to haunt them.
Yeah, I agree. And I just to say that, you know, there are particular systems in our world that will be rolled out for our company, and it'll be like, okay, you use, can I say other people, you use this system for this or this system for that or whatever, and it's, you know, the information is disseminated that here's your secure system, here's your not so secure system. But I think within that, to your point too, I think that you were touching upon this, that it helps to have some centralization, that maybe, you know, editor B within your edit facility has access to Media Silo and is able to, you know, they know what kind of content to share within that system, but should they be the person sharing that content? If they have a downloadable asset, should they be a person who's able to do that? Like, I think, you know, what I've been trying to do a lot is trying to take some of it back, especially like our more secure rough cuts or pre-air content, any of the pre-air content. I don't think anybody should be sharing that outside one particular group, because then you have mass duplication. You have people who don't understand the sensitivity of assets. And, you know, I don't think people necessarily understand that when they're messaging things throughout the organization, that that front end has to be tackled well before everyone else receives information on what's sanctioned and what's not.
Well, thank you. Before Guy gets a hook and pulls us off stage, thank you very much for coming up and participating in the panel. Sorry we didn't get time for questions. But I'd just like to say as well that Media Silo in the South Lower Hall will be having happy hour from 4 to 6. So come on by for a free beer later. Thank you very much for coming, guys.
Matt, thank you so much. Christy.